Blog Talk Radio.
Bonjour, mes amis. Comment ça va? Oh, I hope we're all ça va bienning tonight. Darlings, it's Mummy, Sybil Brunchen, and I'm coming to you live right now, can you imagine, on Come Now, Don't Sulk, part of the Here Be Monsters studio on Blog Talk Radio Network. We come here to you live every Monday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 7 Central, or your corresponding time zone. And darlings, you text me and message me all the time and ask me, what does that mean? That means that because we're podcasting on the internet, we actually are being listened to right now in Australia, in South Africa, in Madagascar. We're being listened to in Akron, Ohio, and Ypsilanti, Michigan. We're in Germany and England and Scotland and all sorts of fascinating places. And it makes us all one big Come Now, Don't Sulk family. Again, I'm Sybil Brunchen, and I'm here with my producer and our headmistress and our founder, none other than Gwendolyn Holdenberry, who also, she's not only on the line right now with us, but she's also the founder of our sponsor, DaughtersofIsis.com. That's DaughtersofIsis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. And we're also brought to you by listeners just like you. Thank you. Gwendolyn, are you on the line?
I am right here. Yes, I am.
She is coming to you from Port St. Lucie in Florida, and I am coming to you from just outside of Philadelphia. As you know, I moved here nearly 2 years ago from New York City, the great Manhattan, center of the earth, and I finally had to leave in disgrace. No, not in disgrace at all. I escaped and with a nail file and a cake, but that's another story for another time. And we've been doing this show now for 3 years. We've been doing this show. We were doing the show back in New York, and we've moved it here. So we're up and down the East Coast now, Gwendolyn down in Florida, me up in the Pennsylvania area, and we have one of our regular callers, and we don't think of him as a caller. We think of him as family. He's on our panel of celebrities, Wayne Johnson. Wayne, are you on the air right now?
Well, yes, I am. And hello, Sybil, darling, and Gwen.
How are you, darling? I posted tonight, before we get anywhere, I'm going to throw the mic to Gwendolyn, because Gwendolyn is the head chemist and founder and fragrantriologist of DaughtersofIsis.com, and they produce over 500 amazing products that are made of essential oils and fragrances and herbs and flowers and all sorts of things. And Gwendolyn comes on the air every week with a fragrance that's appropriate for that time. So here we are at the beginning of April, and I was going to ask her if she had a fragrance that was appropriate for slapped faces or for hurt feelings or alopecia or people who are disgruntled about alopecia or people who think alopecia is funny or people who all the variations, but I'm going to throw it to her. Gwendolyn, it's your spot. Tell us what would be really a good fragrance for us to explore, not only for our noses, but for our souls right now.
Well, take it. Right now, with all of the pressure from above to below, all of there's just a lot going on, isn't there? my pick of the week is Saint Expedite blend that I make. Now, Saint Expedite is that saint that people turn to, especially culturally, for financial intervention in personal or family crisis, from release of sorrow, a return to a grateful feeling, and spiritual rescues. So my choice is intervention in the guise of St. Expedite. And it's a beautiful fragrance. It's very everything in it is something that St. Expedite expects as a token of appreciation. You have the rose auto and a CO2 coconut with amaranth and orris root, which you know is an orchid, cacao or chocolate, and vetiver. It's a very nice smelling blend. It's attracting, but I know that word, and it goes right out my head. But these are gifts for St. Expedite, all of these scents. And blended together, you use this oil to basically, you can use it in meditation. Most people will anoint a candle and burn the candle with the intention of calling on St. Expedite for some financial intervention. He's known to do this, to intervene when you're going through personal or family crisis. People will, you know, light several candles, but always one to St. Expedite is in the mix. A release from sorrow, which is a very personal kind of a tribute. You know, these tributes are for you, St. Expedite, to help release me from sorrow and return, pardon me, to return to gratitude. And it's a spiritual rescue is what you're calling on. So that's the blend I'm going to recommend this week very highly. It's a popular blend. People do enjoy it because it smells so good. And I think Mommy's still setting the table. So I'm going to go back over to Wayne. You're there, yes? Uh-huh.
Yes, I am.
And I'm going to open the mic on the 620 area code. And who's calling in tonight? 620?
Hello, it's Kim from Kansas.
Hi, Kim from Kansas.
Oh, fantastic.
Mommy will be right back online. She had to go and set the table. And, you know, I guess
so
dinner
was just...
what's
topic?
I think that we're probably going to slide around. Yes, everything that's been going on. You're in Kansas, aren't you, Kim?
Yes.
Or mm-hmm. Yeah. Are you planting yet?
I am not planting yet, but things are starting to bloom. My daffodils and magnolia are blooming, so that's good.
That's wonderful. Yeah. How's your weather?
It's been up and down. Last week we had freezing nights already. I mean, just recently as last week in the high 20s. So I don't know. It doesn't know what to do. It can't make up its mind.
Yeah, I'm back on. My phone went dead for just a second. I was calling in, and I couldn't get in on this conversation. Kim, how are you? It's good to hear your voice.
Good, good.
I just have to say that up here in Pennsylvania, you know, a lot of our plants, especially bulbs, are okay with it being cold for a day or two. It can be 40 degrees for 3 or 4 days. It can be 20 degrees for one night. But it can't be 4 or 5 days of 20-degree weather. And, boy, the daffodils, everything got hammered. I'm still waiting to see if some plants that made it all the way through winter did not make it through last week, you know, because it was like they were fine. And they were starting to sprout, and they were starting to come up, and then we literally had 4 nights of weather in the 20s, and it just was like one day after another. It was just too brutal. So we'll see what happens. But I can imagine your stuff is still, you just have such a gift, Kim. You have such a gift.
Well, thank you. I just knew that this week I couldn't miss. There was too much material last week. I had to tune in today.
I missed that. I'm sorry. What did you say? What was the last part?
Oh, I said there was too much material that was going on last week. I knew I needed to tune into your show today.
Oh,
absolutely.
Oh, well, yeah.
Kind of
the most perfect
reason
I've ever heard.
Let's just dive right in. Can we just dive right in?
The slap heard around the world managed to kick COVID and the Ukrainian. Oh my God, the poor Ukrainians were bumped for the slap heard around the world. You know, it was a subject that everyone and still are posting on Facebook and Twitter. People are still posting on it. And I think that the only thing I'm going to say. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, last night, though, I remember as we were getting ready for the show, I asked you if you'd watched the Grammys, and I watched the Grammys until Joni was on. When Joni was off, after Brandi Carlile and Joni, I went over to Agatha Christie. But what I did was I really did myself a bad turn because John Lennon had a new song to introduce, and just before he did, they showed a video made for the Grammys with Zelensky from the Ukraine.
I saw that. Yes, I saw that.
It was absolutely right on the measure, right on the beat. And he came across as very sincere and very stalwart. And I thought that was pretty wonderful. I'm really sorry I missed that. It'll teach me.
Well, the nice thing about YouTube is that you can always re-air it. You could, you know, we have enough technology now that you can re-see anything and sometimes see it better than it was when it was new because it was edited or delayed or whatever. I mean, the slap particularly, the Australians were seeing it complete with all the dialogue. We did not see it in this country. Now you can see every single second of it from every angle because people with cell phones were photographing it and people were recording it and everything. So now, thanks to YouTube and many other sources, you can see anything. And I'm with you. Zelensky's speech was wonderful, and the fact that he encouraged American millionaire, billionaire performers, rap artists, big band singers, everything, to keep on making music, it breaks my heart. It breaks my heart how articulate and wonderful that was and how unself-serving it was. It was fascinating to see a guy in a T-shirt say something like that, you know, and express that. And I'm only sorry that the Academy wouldn't allow him to come on and say, thank you for making your stories. Thank you for making movies. Thank you for making, you know, film and television, and that these stories go all around the world and people in other parts of the world watch America's entertainment. Our entertainment, our art is the greatest weapon, and it is the greatest export we have ever done. Rock and roll, our art.
Slayed the world.
Jazz and blues.
Yeah. Jazz, blues, country western, our music, our films, our stories, our storytelling. We are the shamans. We are the we are the caveman that stood up the first day in a cave and shook a dried rattle in front of a cave, in front of a fire, a campfire, and put some marks on a wall, and that became cave painting. America is the storyteller for the world. Yes, other countries tell beautiful stories, but America is not second rate in its vast entertainment that we send everywhere. And by the way, we are also the ambassador of entertainment. We introduce and nurture entertainment from all around the world into our own culture and then disperse it again. We are truly the lazy Susan of entertainment. It hits our lazy Susan and we spin it around and send it back, and we encourage people to throw their entertainment at us, and we encourage them to see our stuff. That is our nuclear weapon. That is our deadliest, most wonderful weapon.
May I interject a personal note on the Grammys? There's a band, a reggae band called Soja, S-O-J-A, and really it's an acronym. It stands for Soldiers of Jah's Army. Don't read too much into it. It's just, you know, what it is. They go by Soja. Well, they have been up for Grammys for the last 4 years, maybe five, and finally won last night. I know the lead guitarist, Trevor Young, personally. I have a picture of him and me in Secret Music Store where he worked as a young man in Seaford, Delaware, while he was in high
school. That's wonderful.
I've seen this kid grow up. I have seen him work hard to achieve this level that he's at. Soja will fill soccer stadiums in South America. There's a great YouTube clip of them performing at Budapest, Hungary. They are globally recognized, and they finally beat out Ziggy Marley for reggae, best reggae album. It's quite an accomplishment for this young man. So Trevor Young is the lead guitarist, and the band is called Soja. Check them out. They're very, very
okay.
good. Oh, and the latest albums, the last two albums, they recorded at Dave Matthews' personal recording studio in Virginia.
Uh-huh. Great.
So there you go. Okay.
Well, I think it's wonderful that you have a history with that band and that you've known them for a while. It's wonderful seeing I have a couple of people in my life who I knew when they were very, very young, a couple of child actors who are now highly successful actors on television and film. And I had the great privilege of directing them when they were 8 years old, 10 years
Fantastic.
Old. And now they're performers and in their 30s, you know, and 40s. And it's like, well, that gives you an idea of how old I am. But, I mean, it's shocking to see these wonderful people growing up and being, you know, entertaining and having successes. I just want to steer back to Kim because I'm so thrilled to hear from her. We haven't heard from her in months.
Sure.
Kim, talk to us. Talk to us about the headlines, or talk to us about spring, or talk to. I made a funny statement about tonight's show that is spring turning out to be a little more frisky, and I put that photograph from Day of the Triffids up when a woman's being attacked by a houseplant. You know, it's like, how are you doing spring this year? How's spring unfolding for you?
It's a bit delayed. I just started having daffodils bloom, and my little magnolia tree in the backyard is starting to bloom. So other than that, it's pretty desolate in my yard. The iris are coming up, but they're only about 5 or 6 inches tall right now, most of them. So things are very delayed. It's pretty harsh. Cold,
well,
part of the
and there's sort of a metaphor in there, because what I was really asking you was how is spring unfolding for you spiritually and intellectually and psychologically and politically and whatever, in other ways. Yes, our gardens are, my garden I use as a metaphor. I was out working in it today and, you know, digging in it, but every once in a while it would start to sprinkle and then it would get sunny and I was chuckling at the metaphor in that, you know, the nurturing, no nurturing, the withholding, no, the giving, the whatever. So where are you coming out of winter? I think we usually look forward to spring wherever we are here in the temperate climates as being a release and a reawakening and a cozy sort of wonderful thing that's, oh, God, it's spring. I can go outside in just a sweater. But spring can also be grumpy and withholding emotionally. You know what I mean? One week, Wayne and Gwendolyn and I talked about the fact that it's a time to fall in love. It's also, for some of us, a time that we have losses, either a loved one or a parent or a relationship that broke up or things like that. So I was just sort of checking in with you on how your spring is going as a medical professional, as someone who's been dealing with COVID for the whole winter and 2 years now. I mean, are you in a happy place or are you in a grumpy place? Are you in a sad
I'm
place?
I'm in a very happy place. I love this time of the year because my favorite part about this time of the year is the longer light at the end of the day, because I work till about 5 every day inside.
Yes.
And so it's nice for me this time of the year that I actually get to have several hours of light, whereas in the winter, a lot of times I'm getting home about the time the sun's setting, you know, 20, 30 minutes later. So
yes.
I love that I get to have more light. And I'll sit on my front porch is angled to where Earth is situated to where the angle of the sunset is just when it's about 5:30, 6 o'clock, you know, it just really hits it. And I'll just go out there and just sit in it just to soak up the good vibes and the feeling of just sitting there in the sun when it's, even when it's cool outside. But so
I understand completely. For those of you at home, Kim is a regular person that we have call in, and we wish she would call in more regularly. I actually want her to be on our panel. because I would live to have you be a weekly contributor. But Kim is a medical professional and has worked all through the COVID catastrophe, as if it isn't hard enough to work in a hospital normally, mm-hmm. under normal circumstances. Kim has been doing yeoman's duty. I mean, she should have 3 Purple Hearts and a Medal of Honor at this point, because you were absolutely dunked into the COVID disaster, weren't you?
Yes, and we're really short right now. We've had a nurse retire and a nurse PCS, which is the Army version of getting a new assignment, new post assignment. So we're really short right now. I'm training a brand new nurse who's been a nurse for a couple of years and never worked in the operating room. So I'm her preceptor, and that's going really well. But, yeah, we're super short. But it is what it is. You take care of the patient in front of you, and you just don't worry about what the rest of the day has to be. Store for you.
Yeah.
Keep going.
Even in my capacity, when I worked in a hospital, I worked at New York Hospital, which was the, you know, New York Cornell, and now it's linked to Columbia Presbyterian and everything. It was one of the big, great hospitals in New York, and this was 50 years ago. And I worked on the cardiac care unit and then on a general floor. Sometimes when it's overwhelming, many people from the clerical staff on up to the chief of staff, you know, the chief surgeon or whatever, there's times where you can't take it all in. So what you do is you focus, much as the Japanese claim philosophically, to compartmentalize, to say, I can't do 50 things at once. I can do one thing well, and that's what I'm going to do. And you sort of put aside everything, all the screaming voices, all the crying, especially in the emergency room. You can't deal with 12 car accidents at once and a woman in labor and this and that and this and that. You can take care of the person in front of you and do that well, and then the worker next to you will take care of the screaming woman who's in labor. You've got to try and focus, and that's what sometimes you have to do. And it's not perfect, but you don't have 12 arms. You have 2 arms, 2 hands, and sometimes it's about ducking your head, looking at the patient in front of you, focusing on that, and having tunnel vision, not peripheral vision. You have to have tunnel vision. You have to say, I can help this person. I can do this. And certainly in the COVID catastrophe, with all of us going out on our balconies and leaning out of our windows with our frying pans and wooden spoons and saluting all of the firemen, all the policemen, all the emergency care workers at 7 o'clock every night, the way we did for month after month mm-hmm. after month. I mean, on West End Avenue and 105th Street, the windows would open and people would lean out and ring their bells, clang their frying pans, you know, for 10 minutes saluting all the people that keep the world going, the garbage men, the firemen, the policemen, the mail carriers, the subway token booth lady, the grocery store stockers, the people that drive the food into the city. These are the salt of the earth, nurses, doctors, orderlies, the cleaning staff in a hospital, the janitors. They are the salt of the earth. So, and I, you know, you are still in the thick of it. And, of course, I told Gwendolyn right before the show tonight, the New York Times posted that there's a 41% increase in infections in the new COVID in New York City, in Manhattan.
Yep.
A 41% jump.
Yeah. That's the new BA2 variant
we're
speaking of? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, people don't understand. This thing mutates very well and evolves. And this new one is very contagious also.
Yes. Jeez. It happens to be mild so far, but it is highly contagious. So, and yet New York is filled with people who are refusing to wear masks because it's spring and everything got nice again. And well, COVID is sort of, Omicron is disappearing. Oh, I've already had it, or I've had 2 shots, but not my 3rd, or I had it, so I won't get it again. Everyone's got an excuse. But my husband and I just canceled a trip to New York. We had a business thing that we had to do, but we were going to be in a theater with 300 or 400 people who may or may not be masked. And the producers are not insisting that everyone be masked because it might be impolite, quote unquote, or it might be a downer, quote unquote. Although George and I were in New York City 2 weeks ago to see a play. We were in Asbury Park, and the theater had 150 people in it, and we were required not only to wear our masks, but listen to this. We had to produce our cards proving our vaccination status.
Vaccination, yeah.
Yes, very
and,
good.
And
very
by good. The way, there was no wiggle room. You had to have your card with your vaccination status and a mask, and there were only 150 people in a small theater, but there was no ifs, ands, or buts, and this was in Asbury Park, okay, right across the river, you know, right outside of New York. This event in Manhattan that we were supposed to go to was kind of come see, come saw, live and let live. I see 300 people, 400 people in a theater, and they might or might not ask people to wear masks, and they don't want to make people feel uncomfortable. And yet here we go, 41% jump. So
right.
George and I are not going, and we're curious. In a week or so, are we going to find out that there was, you know, it was a super spreader and 25 people came down with COVID, you know, 72 hours later? It's like, what are you going to do? Kim, what's your advice?
Well, I was getting ready to add something that's a whole other can of worms, but people are getting fake immunization cards. That's a real thing, because like people that want to fly that don't want to get immunized, it's a thing. They're buying them on, I don't know where they're getting them, but. For real.
Well, wow. we're going for our fourth shot tomorrow because CVS is offering it to us, and you can walk in and get your booster, and it's been 5 months since we had our booster in October, and my attitude is, you know what, if you're offering a booster, I'll take it. Obviously, you don't want to take it too soon because you don't want to make it redundant, but you don't want to let too much lapse between shots so that your system then goes down, and that's the window of opportunity for COVID to come in. This is me. I've said it to Gwendolyn and Wayne over and over again. Mm-hmm. I am not Matt Lauer. I am not a germaphobe. I'm not Felix Unger. I'm not a germaphobe. I don't wash my hands 40 times a day. I'm not, you know, afraid of germs at every – as a matter of fact, I think it's good for us to get some germs once in a while. I think it's
right,
a great booster. I'm appalled. I have two friends that get antibiotics at the drop of a hat. They've got some idiot doctor who, when one of these two women gets a sniffle, they get an antibiotic. It's like, as a gay person, remembering how AIDS went everywhere in the 80s, I remember that people used to take antibiotics, erythromycin, ampicillin, penicillin, as a prophylactic. I remember boys going to the baths and discos, and they would take penicillin or antibiotics on Friday evening as a prophylactic, as if taking it would keep you from getting VD, syphilis, whatever. And their immune systems were ruined. And that was the opening thing for AIDS to come in. It was like it was yet another way that you had weakened your body because of stupid medical practices. There was a doctor named Dr. Unger, coincidentally, in Greenwich Village, who had a fishbowl in his waiting room on the coffee table, and you'd have 20 gay guys in there, and they'd be in for their checkups or for their, you know, clap or whatever, or their amoebas, and he used to take little manila envelopes, little 8-pack manila envelopes, they're tiny, and he would scoop out of the fishbowl an assortment of various colored antibiotic capsules and tablets. And he would pat the boy on the back, and he would say, now, Scott, remember, take this. Are you going out tonight? Are you going out tonight or tomorrow to the baths? Are you going out just going tonight? Okay, I want you, when you get home, take two of these, okay? There you go. See you in 6 months. Bye-bye. Okay, next patient in. Everyone got prophylactic ampicillins or tetracyclines. Can you imagine? And these two women that I know have a doctor who's apparently doing that. I can't imagine how anyone could be on antibiotics as a preventative, as if you'd even take aspirin without a headache. Oh, I might get a headache tonight. You know what? I'm with my in-laws. I'm going to take a couple of aspirin now to ward off my headache.
That's hypochondria, that is.
Yeah.
That's hypochondria. I know that because we had a Well, she was just a really close friend of my parents when I was very small. And, you know, we called them Aunt Ruth or whatever. And she was a diabetic who drank, you know, old fashioned. And took aspirins, you know, I see a headache coming. The only time I've ever done that is if I had been Outridge running late and I knew I was slammed, I would take a few aspirin before I went to bed. But, you know,
that makes sense. No, see, that makes sense. If you come home drunk, and you want to be careful and you're not willing to throw up and get it all out, the best thing to do is to drink tons of water and maybe take a few aspirin and then go to bed and hope for the best. Hydrate yourself and take some aspirin. The only other reason I can think of to take aspirin, and it would be baby aspirin, is because you have a heart condition and your cardiologist has said, you know, something, a couple of baby aspirin every day or whatever, or one baby aspirin is, you know, part of the regimen of being, you know, a heart patient. But whatever, anyway, I'm just flabbergasted. But like I said, I'm not a germaphobe, but boy, if it comes to a vaccination about COVID, I'm going for it. Everything I'm reading seems to lean more towards that than not. And, you know, I'm someone who remembers polio vaccines being invented, you know, right in front of me, and diphtheria and scarlet fever and measles. I'm a person who remembers measles parties and mumps parties where people would go and deliberately infect their children with measles, mumps, and chicken pox so that it would be done and out of the way. Imagine infecting a third grade class of children who one has chicken pox or measles, and you invite all the kids over that Saturday for a nice cake and ice cream party so they'll all get chicken pox at the same time. And then one of them takes it home or to a neighbor who doesn't know she's pregnant, and there you go. And suddenly you have a child that's either, severely handicapped or dies, because it got German measles or whatever. The fetus was exposed to German measles. I just don't understand. But that's another one of my soapboxes. Let's talk about cheerful things. Kim, come up with a happy subject for us.
Well, I don't know if it's happy, but I tuned in to hear what your opinion of Will Smith's debacle was. Specifically,
Go ahead. Let's go with it.
You know what? I'm sure that half the audience is going to tune off right now because we hit it so hard. But this is what I'm going to say, and then I'm going to throw it to Gwendolyn and Wayne, and then I want to hear you. Actually, Kim, what do you think of the Will Smith thing? You go first.
Well, I thought way before anyone else made any comments that he initially thought it was funny, and then he kind of got bullied into, like, when he looked over at her, like, oh. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what – I can't even imagine a normal person with – I guess he's not a normal person, but something was going on there beyond what –
Well, first of all, we all are in agreement with you. All of us noticed that it looked like he was chuckling.
Something. Yeah,
he was laughing, and then he saw Jada react to it, and that is something. All of it was something to do between Mr. and Mrs. Smith. It had nothing to do with anything but them. But right. You know, the fellow was sitting there on pins and needles about an Oscar nomination. He knee-jerk reacted, and he's behaved badly ever since.
Yeah.
And Wayne also, Wayne and Gwendolyn and I all agree, and many people do, we saw him chuckling. The camera cut to both him and Jada. He was laughing. Mm-hmm. He was being funny. The comment was not about alopecia. It wasn't mocking someone with alopecia or the symptoms of alopecia. He was commenting on the fact that she had shaved her head for whatever reason, but he didn't reference that. And he wasn't saying, he didn't say, hey, cue ball. He didn't say, he didn't say, oh, you've been tearing your hair out over Will's Oscar over the last 2 weeks. He didn't say anything like that. He actually commented on a character in a movie.
And they're making
Jane.
A remake.
And Jane, yes, and Jane, G.I. Jane, was a physically beautiful creature. See, the whole point was they hired Demi Moore to play it, and her head is beautiful, shaved. It's a beautiful skull, and she was beautiful in the movie, and G.I. Jane was not, you know, it was, G.I. Jane is a heroic figure. She's not a coward or a loser. There was nothing about the comment that was mocking or diminishing in any way. But if you're hypersensitive or if you have alopecia, okay, so you twisted it that way, whatever you need to do. But then whatever that case was, it was not a cause for physical violence, A, in my opinion, and B, people keep focusing on the slap, the event, the thing, the ba, 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 ba. I try to hop in a helicopter and go higher and higher and higher and look down on a bigger and bigger picture. And my bigger picture, and I've been accused of being a racist now this past week for saying this, because people aren't. Oh, yeah. Oh, I've been accused of all sorts of things on Facebook and everything. So I said that this was, first of all, it's an iconic event. It is one of the most iconic entertainment events of any calendar year. So the Oscars dwarf the Tonys and the Emmys and everything. The Oscars are this royalty. It's America's royalty. The people in the room are America's quote-unquote beautiful people, okay? They're the wealthiest right. and the prettiest and the most entertaining, blah, blah, blah. They show up in their $50,000 gowns and their whatever. They're dripping in Harry Winston diamonds. This is America's royalty. There is a red carpet, indeed. And so – and more people are watching this around the world than any other event. Okay. And then on top of it, Will Smith, who's been working for 30 years in the industry since he was nearly a child, and he has been working and working and working towards being a serious actor as opposed to being just a clown. So people like Sean Penn, who was a clown, and Will Smith, who was a clown, all these people who were teenage clowns, have lifted themselves painstakingly through incredible labor and investment of their own money and time and effort to become, quote unquote, serious actors. And indeed, he has now lifted himself into a golden opportunity. And tonight, that night, he was to be crowned. It looked like it was a sure thing. And everything was conspired. All the planets had lined up. To quote Gwendolyn, all the planets were in place. Everything was in place for him to be anointed as the new, and imagine the deals, the financial deals, as an Olympic winner, as a gold medalist, or as an Oscar winner, the deals you're going to make that week. Mm-hmm. You're going to be hired by Cheerios or by Chevrolet or God knows the endorsement deals, millions of dollars in endorsement deals. And he's a hero to black kids. He's a hero to any person of color. He's a hero to children who grew up marginally because he grew up marginally. He is a hero. And his wife talks him into perhaps getting up. He strides up on stage and slaps another man in the face and then strides back smirking. He strides back. If you watch it, you can see him sort of, yeah, I'm the man. And you can see his body language striding back. Yep, that's how we do, which is what his son said. And they sit down.
Right.
He sits down.
That's what I was thinking.
And he has, yeah. Forget his own opportunities. Forget his own career. Forget what he taught his son in that moment. Forget what he taught all sorts of kids, black and white. Well, you know what? If someone's rude, just slap them, especially if you're doing it for a woman. By the way, a woman can't defend herself, so you've got to go out, stride into the world, and slap someone in the face or punch them. You know, if you punch them, why not stab them? Why not pick up a bar stool? Why not escalate it? Let's do that. That's what you've shown. And what my point was, and the reason I was called a racist was, I said, in this time when half the country is itching, just itching, for an opportunity to point at any person of color or a gay person, mm-hmm. any marginal person, any minority, and say, see, that's what they do. That's what they do.
Yeah.
And he specifically did it because I'll tell you something else, and this is where my bigotry comes in. If it had been a stagehand backstage whose wife had been, you know, lost her hair to her cancer, you know, treatment, and a person backstage holding a spotlight or a cable heard Chris Rock say that and said, my wife just lost all her hair this week because she was on chemo. He can't say that to me, his fucking asshole, and strode out on stage in front of millions of people around the world and slapped
He'd
Chris Rock.
He'd still be in jail.
Exactly, Kim. Not only would he, first of all, security would have descended on him in front of the world. So security guards would have immediately jumped out and gotten him. Secondly, he would have been dragged off stage. He would have been pinned to the floor. The police would have been called. No one would have been asked. Chris Rock would not have been asked if he wants to press charges. The police wouldn't have gone back to their precinct. They would have dragged that stagehand out. The union, not only would he be fired by the producers of the Academy Awards, but his union would have pulled his card and he would be ruined. He would still be in jail and he would probably be A, sued and B, thrown in jail for a couple of months for assault. But because Will Smith is the anointed 1%. See, it goes back. People keep saying, well, race, race, race. I'll tell you something. I think that another dirty secret in this country is classism. It's not just racism. It's classism. We have people who do things who are rich, who can do what they like because they're rich or pretty. And that's where we stand. And so I was accused of being a bigot when I said, you know, Will Smith was allowed to stay. Will Smith was this. And people said, you're criticizing that. You're criticizing blah, blah, blah. Thank God Chris Rock was black. Because if he'd been white, oh, my God, that would have been the end of the world. But I'm telling you right now, Will Smith enabled 47% of this country and probably more who believe that Donald Trump is a saint, that Marjorie Taylor Greene is the Virgin Mary, and that Will Smith is that N-word. He's just another N. You know what? Rich or poor, they're all N's. It is just an N. You can take the slum out. You can take the N out of the slum, but you can't take the slum out of the N. And there are people in all of that, those states, you know, those places that are saying that. Well, you can, even a billionaire, if he's an N, he's a slum N. They're all, that's what they are. That's why I'm voting for, you know, Kevin McCarthy. That's why I'm going to vote for Marjorie Taylor Greene, because she'll protect us from all of them. It's like, oh, great. Great, Will. That's what you've left us with. A bunch of people who are enabled into their grotesque attitudes against brown people, red people, black people, yellow people, gay people, transgender. We are all a big stew pot of sewage to them. And you just made sure you rubber stamped their feelings. You said, that's who we are by doing that. That's what you did. And I'm accused of being a racist because I dared to criticize a black man on a choice. But if he was white and he did it, I would criticize him. I would say, well, you shouldn't have done that. As a white man, though, there aren't those same consequences. You know, white people won't say, well, he grew up in Detroit, for instance. So all people from Detroit are slum people. Or he's got bright red hair and green eyes. So, or if he was Irish, you know. They're all a bunch of losers. They're all a bunch of potato eaters, you know, blah, 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 blah. All of those issues. But today, with this election cycle coming, November is 10 minutes away, and we're all being warned about November. And Will Smith, he tipped voters. There are voters that will vote differently because they saw that. If they're on the fence, they will be like, you know something, the Black Lives Matter gang, they are kind of a pain in the ass. I was sort of come see, come saw. I was sort of on the fence about it. But then I see that and I think, you know what? Maybe Donald Trump is right. Maybe Marjorie Taylor Greene is right. Maybe they're right. Great. That's one vote gone. Yep. Multiply that. Think of it. I'm surrounded here in Philadelphia. But there are Trump banners still on people's front yards in the suburbs.
Yeah. Here too. It's terrible.
The only thing where I live, see where you live, well, first of all, where you live, Kim, it might be different. And where Glenn lives, it definitely is different. You may still see Confederate flags. Where I live, I'm on the eastern side of Pennsylvania. A person would probably not dare to fly a Confederate flag
on their car or their or a banner or a bumper sticker. That we don't see those, but we see Trump banners, we see Trump signs, we see signs on front people's front yards that say, "See, I told you Biden was going to ruin the country, or whatever. See, Biden's going to declare war. Well, Biden's going to destroy us in World War III. There's a banner near us where we live. See, Biden's going to end the world, bring about the end of the world. Told you so." Some sort of thing like that. And then, you know, it's red with, you know, MAGA in it somewhere. We still live with that. And believe me, those people watched the Oscars and they saw that and they said, yeah, I was right. I was right. He's black. That's all you need to know. Great. Thanks, Will. Thank you, Jada. You know, I'm sorry. And if that makes me a racist for criticizing, but of course I criticized, I criticized Jackson back in 1985 when he was running for president and he came up with his Rainbow Coalition. Do you remember that?
You talking about Jesse Jackson?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jesse Jackson had his Rainbow Coalition and I knew for a fact he had been, prior to his numbers crumbling, he had been a right-wing, born-again Christian, Christian fundamentalist who condemned gay and lesbian issues.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
then suddenly we were part of his Rainbow Coalition. This is the man who took blood on the balcony and put it on his shirt and claimed that he had cradled, I'm drawing a blank because Martin Luther King's as he died.
Yeah.
And it was like, wait a minute, he's an opportunist. I don't condemn the civil rights movement, but I can see the forest for the trees. I mean, I know when someone is an operator, you know? And
yeah,
here
he's
is. He was always an operator. But I was accused of being a racist because a white person shouldn't say anything bad about a black person. Well, okay. That's kind of racist, actually. If you really want to be honest, that's actually racist because
it is.
For you to criticize me because I'm white. So if I was black, I could criticize Jesse Jackson. And in fact, a black woman standing beside me during this interview back in the 80s in Cincinnati agreed with me and said she agreed. And she said, absolutely. She said, I've never trusted him. Blah, blah, blah. And the people that accused me of being a racist accused her of being a racist. And she was black.
And she was black. Yeah.
Yeah. They said you are a conspirator. You're a you are colluding with them, and you are enabling racism by criticizing our Jesse Jackson. It's like, oh my God. That's when the left becomes as scary as the right. And believe me, I'm perfectly clear about criticizing on the left our excessive political correctness, our lack of witnessing humor as irony, or people on Facebook get all in a dither about, like, well, that's not a thing you can joke about. It's like, well, wait a minute. Humor, all comedy is based on loss. All comedy is based on people having setbacks or tragedy or, you know, loss or whatever. The basest comedy of all is slapstick. It's the stupidest, easiest to understand comedy of all is slapstick. And what is it based on? A person slipping on a banana peel. Would you laugh at an 85-year-old woman on your front sidewalk who slipped on a banana peel, levitated up 6 feet in the air, landed on her back and broke her hip? Of course not. But a silent film of that, and she isn't breaking her hip, and she's sitting right up, and then she gets a pie in the face. That's slapstick comedy. All comedy is based on satire, on ridicule, on it's the way the human brain processes tragedy. Animals don't process tragedy with comedy. You have to have a lot of cortex to come up with a comic metaphor, simile thing. You have to have complex brain tissue to come up with irony. And that's what comedy is. Comedy is about things like that. But, oh, dear God, on the left or the right, God help you if you're a comedian. Do I like Chris Rock? No, I think he's a jackass. Do I like Kevin Hart? No, he's an asshole. But on the other hand, I mean, what do you want them to do? come out and say, I put up some tulip bulbs this spring, and they're blooming. Thank you for coming to the Comedy Store. Good night, folks. I'll be here till Thursday. Good night. It's like, no. Comedy is about saying risky things and coming up with strange perceptions and perspectives.
Even if you don't like Chris Rock, he couldn't have possibly have handled himself any better, could he have?
Oh,
yeah,
Kim,
no, he was.
You are so right. He was so smooth and continued on.
I can't believe it.
Beautifully.
It's like he got to pause the universe and, like, think about it for a second, and then, like, you know, the rest of it. I mean, I know, obviously, I'm making that up. But,
well, he was an adult.
How did he do that?
Yeah.
Well,
and by
the
way,
he continued all night long.
First of all, he went backstage. Then he turned the police away. The police came. He turned them away. He said, no, no, no. It's okay. Just go. And then he stood backstage. He was there. He did more. Then he went to the party or parties. He appeared at parties. Then he was on the news next day. It went on and on and on. Will Smith, it took him 72 hours or 48 hours to finally come up with a real apology.
Exactly.
You know, and I wonder how much they paid a PR agent for that. You know, it was written.
Exactly.
It wasn't him coming on the air and saying it live. It was like they had to hire the foremost PR agency in Hollywood for $50,000 for a 25-word apology.
Right.
So
I'm sure you're
thank
not
God
far
he's a millionaire.
You
know,
well,
thank God he's
you,
a millionaire.
You know,
and by the way, I'm dying to know the endorsement deals that vanished. They think Simone Biles lost endorsement deals by refusing to perform for the Olympics, and she just didn't want to do it because she was incapacitated. but the endorsement deals he lost overnight,
mm-hmm.
that'll wipe the smile off Jada Pinkett's face. That ought to because he had to sit down with his son and his wife and say, boys and girls, we're not going to be buying the house in St. Bart's after all. Nope, we won't be getting that house, you know, in the Caribbean. That's gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So
well,
Tesla
yeah.
just pulled my advertising deal for them for the next year. Tesla just said, yeah, we're not going to be having you sell our $100,000 cars, you know, so
right.
yeah, that deal's gone. I mean, he lost everything from God knows who, Tesla to Gerber. I mean, he lost every endorsement deal. I can't imagine any endorsement deal. And by the way, he only lost his membership to the Academy. That's nothing. Speaking as a SAG member, that means nothing. He resigned, but they asked him to resign because they were going to fire him. They were going to. But
exactly.
The more important thing, which people don't realize, non-entertainment people don't realize, is he could have lost his SAG card.
Yeah,
they could have said,
that.
You are not in keeping with Screen Actors Guild and AFTRA. We do not commit violence and continue to be members of a union. But I'll tell you one thing,
you think
ladies and gentlemen, that stagehand would have lost his union card to, you know, mm-hmm. Union 401 electricians or sound men.
What about Actors Annuity?
What's Actors Annuity? You mean Actors Equity?
Equity, yeah. What about that?
Actors'
I mean,
Equity is theater.
Yeah.
That's Actors' Equity.
Okay.
Yeah, that's stage.
Okay.
That's Broadway, and that's theater. But it's amazing because if he had lost his SAG card, that means he would be out of the business. No more nominations.
Yeah.
As
no
it is,
work.
he won't be presenting an award next year.
Mm-hmm.
He will not be asked to present any awards. As a matter of fact, if he was smart, which I don't know if he is, he might not show, he shouldn't maybe show up. Because the first thing out of it, he's got an asterisk by his name now. It's like the Olympic winners that are, you know, jinxed by their drug use. Mm-hmm. They've got an asterisk. Did win a gold medal, but it was retracted. You know,
mm-hmm.
that's what'll happen to him.
We have
you know, they'll
minutes.
Say, well, he keeps his award, but, you know, he's the guy that slapped a person on stage. Remember those that Oscar ceremony? Yep, he'll always be the guy that hit somebody on stage. It's a weird, bad place to be.
The most amazing thing I saw after that was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's statement, what he wrote. That was amazing. He really
That's
nailed
why I
it.
Posted it all over my pages. all over my pages. I posted it again and again and again.
It was stunning. It was stunning. It was a masterwork, and it was the right thing for a black man to say. It really was.
Kim, if you go to any one of my pages, the Lollipop Guild page or my page, any one of the – I've got four pages on Facebook, different things. You'll scroll down. You'll see the Kareem – it's a visual, and it's Kareem.
Okay.
And then it's also Will Smith slapping Chris Rock, and then it's a picture of Sybil with the microphones. It's a montage. It's a collage. If you read that, you'll see his printed statement, and it was absolutely articulate and wonderful. So.
Okay.
Did it occur to anybody else besides me that perhaps, just perhaps, Chris Rock was really shocked because he had no idea about the alopecia?
I didn't know about her alopecia, but I can't keep up on everyone's malady du jour. You know, I'm so sorry that there are 8,000 celebrities per minute, and I'm so sorry. I grew up in a time when there were 50 actors in Hollywood. Andy Warhol was right in the 70s. He said, eventually, everyone will be famous for 15 minutes. And he had no idea that he was right. And it's not 15 minutes. It's 15 microseconds. And he didn't know that it was everyone. He didn't know about the Kardashians. So there are a million celebrities. They're all winning something, and they all have a boo-hoo's diagnosis from a really expensive Beverly Hills doctor. I'm sad. I have a hangnail, and it's not fair. And that's where we live. And her alopecia is not the center of the universe. She thinks it is, but it's not. You know, it just isn't. She doesn't even have cancer. She has a condition where she loses her hair, and that is very unfortunate. But you know what? She's a multimillionaire. She still has she has a gorgeous face, a beautifully shaped head, and a wardrobe that's worth millions. No one cares about her fucking alopecia. There are women who scrub floors on their hands and knees in sad little public schools in Alabama who have alopecia.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And nobody cares. And no one's interested. And you know what? A third grader made fun of her because her hair was coming out in handfuls. And that's just the way it is for Mrs. Jefferson down in Butt Poke, Alabama. That's her reality. So what am I supposed to think about Jada Pinkett Smith? Oh, poor you, with your Harry Winston diamonds and your 12 limousines. Poor you. It's a bunch of classism bullshit. This country stinks from the head, as Ben Franklin said about fish. This country stinks from the head. You have people at the top of the ladder who boo-hoo about their sad, soiled diapers. It's ridiculous. I'm sorry, Kim. I monopolized the whole second half of the show with answering your question about what I think of this whole thing. These people contaminated hardworking people with their stupid, petty thing. It's ridiculous. So
well, it's certainly still the topic. I think Zelensky brought it. He asked everybody, especially those entertainers last night, to tell the story.
I agree.
Their social media, and I haven't been posting about the war or anything, but I posted him, and I did post about, I posted Kareem Abdul's rebuttal on the whole thing with
so
the slap.
Yeah, excuse me, folks. I think we only have a minute left.
We do.
I think we may need to close.
I'm going to close. Thank you for being daddy. I'm going to close by saying, Kim, I love you more than my luggage. Please call in every week. If you don't, I'm coming out there to the Midwest and kicking your ass. I mean that from love. Wayne, as always, thank you for being on the show tonight. Gwendolyn, thank you for our opportunities, as always, producing the show. Folks, you've been listening to Come Now, Don't Sulk. We'll see you next Monday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 7 Central, or your corresponding time zone. These three people are three of my favorite people in the world, and so are you at home. Thank you so much. Good night, everybody.
Good night.